In a column in yesterday's New York Times, writer Stanley Fish posed a familiar problem. You're standing at the, staring at the hardcovers in an airport bookstore when the announcement comes over the speakers. Your flight is ready to board. You have 3, maybe 4 minutes to pick a book. So how do you decide? Well, Stanley Fish is here to tell us how he decides, and we want to hear from you. When you look to clinch that last-minute sale, when your options are limited and time is tight, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Stanley Fish is with us from member station WXEL in West Palm Beach in Florida. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
And you have a lot of tips for people about what they shouldn't do when they're considering a book at the last minute.
Right. They shouldn't look at the back cover, partly because the back cover was written by an advertising flack. Sometimes the back cover can give you some information that's useful in a negative way, according to your taste. If I see that a book is touted as something that has an international situation or scene, I put it down immediately.
Uh-huh.
I like this country or perhaps England. And if I'm told in the back cover that it's wildly funny, I quickly turn it away because I believe that the work of writing a mystery should be, within certain limits, serious.
Mm-hmm. You also say to ignore the blurbs.
Yeah, I used to go with the blurbs because I would see some author that I really liked touting a book until I talked to a very famous mystery writer whom I really like, and told him that I had bought a book on his recommendation. He told me he hadn't remembered the book. He probably didn't read it. He was no doubt doing a favor for his publisher. So it turned out that these guys give each other blurbs as one might give one's guest party favors.
I have to insert here. You've written a blurb or two yourself in your time.
I do. I've written many blurbs for academic books, and I've had to read the entire book and then formulate 3 or 4 sentences that made it clear that I had really gotten into its thesis.
So
but this doesn't seem to be the case.
All right. Well, you then seem to be in the minority. I just ask for them. I just say, hats in the air. Anyway, you say the surefire test is to open the book and read the first sentence.
Yes, you read the first sentence because it will tell you whether or not the author has a mind and also whether or not he or she can write a sentence that knows about all the other sentences that are going to follow. I call this the angle of lean. A good first sentence will, in fact, contain everything in it that the next 300 pages will deliver, and therefore it will push you forward in an almost irresistible way.
Well, let's hear some examples that you had in your column. Here's one. He cut through the morning rush hour crowd like a shark fin through water.
Well, the only advantage of that one is that it's short, and as soon as you see it, you put it away. I mean, it is the only uncliched word in that one, as far as I can tell, is he.
Here's another one. Brianne Parker didn't look like a bank robber or a murderer. Her pleasantly plump baby face fooled everybody.
Well, you know, if someone names you Brianne, well, what are you going to do? But to name your heroine or anti-heroine Brianne really is a very bad choice. But the part that loses me immediately is the part her pleasingly plump face, baby face fooled everyone. That's just a glossy way to say didn't look like a bank robber or a murderer. It's also, again, cliched. So all of the interest that might have been generated by the first part of the sentence is dissipated by its superfluous second and third parts.
Here's another sentence, which you say is also bad. Some stories just can't wait to be told.
Well, yes, that suggests that the author is absolutely fascinated by the mechanics of his own craft. He's contemplating himself as an author, or she is, and wants you to do so too. But I always decline the invitation and say, no thanks. If I want to do that, I'll read John Milton.
Time is running out. The doors will soon be closing. You're right. Here's something that you might consider. Stromos was in high school when he met the boy who would someday murder his wife and son.
Yeah. First of all, the name is nicely odd and even ugly. And then it introduces you to 2 or 3 questions that you want to pursue as you read. Why did 2 boys who met in high school come to be in the kind of hostile and adversarial situation that leads one to murder the wife and son of another. And I think that just propels you forward into the story. So it's quite a neat sentence. The only problem is that the author knows that it's quite a neat sentence. And he's kind of parading it in front of you and asking you to admire him as he admires himself. And I think that's an invitation also that I usually want to decline.
We'll get to the winning sentence in just a moment, but
yes.
Let's see if we get some callers on the line. This is Deborah. Deborah calling us from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I completely agree with your guest. I get sucked in by reading the first couple of sentences of a book, and I also read the little blurb about the author because I want to get a sense of who the guy is or who the woman is and try to lend credibility to their story or whatever the book is. And I picked up a book in the Toronto airport and got completely sucked in by the first three sentences of the book. It was called Why Mr. Wright Can't Find You. And it was just amazing. And I just love the writing style, and I just wanted to say I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And you made your flight?
Barely. I ran down the concourse and was like the last one on the plane. They were waiting for me. So.
Well, Stanley Fish, presuming it's a writer you're not familiar with, what do you look for? Is this, you know, a former prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, or?
Well, I do. Since I teach at a law school, I do read a lot of legal thrillers. But then when I read a little biography, I'm always wondering, why isn't he working any longer? why has she stopped doing that interesting job as a prosecutor and turned into someone who has to churn out one of these every 6 months? So the little biographical thing doesn't do it for me.
Thanks,
Eric. You kind of want to see what his or her platform is. What gives them credibility. And they don't have to be necessarily an expert, but you have to trust their background that what they're going to tell you is valid.
I'm not interested in their platform. I'm interested in whether or not they can write good, clean, compact, and forward-leaning sentences. If they can do that, I don't care where they came from.
Deborah, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Stanley Fish, a scholar and author, a professor of law at Florida International University in Miami, guest columnist this month for The New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is Paul. Paul with us from Livonia in Michigan.
Yeah, hey. This is how I pick my books in the airport. I usually go for something small and compact that's going to fit either in my pocket or at least not make sure my elbows bump into those guys next to me.
That's a pretty low standard there, Paul.
Well, also though, I flip through to make sure the paragraphs aren't going to be super long and overly verbose that are going to make me fall asleep on the plane. I like things short and sort of compact and keep the flow going.
So you're
pow pow.
You're looking for a page turner then.
Yeah, or at least not anything that's going to put me to sleep, because, again, I don't want to fall on that guy next to me and wake up drooling on him.
Well, that's a laudable goal, but Stanley Fish, it seems to me you have somewhat higher standards.
Yes, but the caller has a point. The physical aspect of a book is important to it. And I used to also share his fondness for smaller volumes, but now at my advanced age, I find myself buying the ones with long pages and big print.
Big print. Very good. Thanks very much, Paul. Let's see if Marlis is on the line. Marlis with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi. I have two recommendations. One is reading is too important to wait until the last 3 minutes before you board a plane to make a decision.
Some of us are not as organized as you.
And secondly, I always look at the inside publishing history of a book because I can't think of anything worse than realizing when I'm on a plane that I've read the book before.
Ah.
Under a different title.
I've even bought them under the same title, and 15 pages in.
Always look at the inside page to see when the book was published and if I had read it under a different title.
Well, that's good advice, I think. Don't you think, Stanley Fish?
Now, it would be if publishers weren't much more clever than we are, and they sometimes reissue a book and give as the date the present date rather than its previous date. Of course, if you read the very small print, which again I am no longer able to read, then you wouldn't be fooled, but I've gotten fooled.
Marlis, thanks very much.
You're-
And let's get down to that winning sentence that got you to buy the book. And this is Joel Campbell, 11 years old at the time, began his descent into murder with a bus ride.
Yeah, that's a sentence which, first of all, begins with a name, Joel Campbell, that sounds like a name of a serious person. But then you discover that that serious person, who may still be serious, is only 11 years old. And so it seems a lighter sentence than it did at the beginning, but then began his descent into murder. Takes all the lightness away and raises a serious question. How could a boy of 11 become involved in murder? The answer that's given to you with a bus ride only deepens the mystery. And then I think, at least I, and I believe most readers, will be off in search of the answer. And the sentence doesn't preen. It doesn't display its art. It just performs its art.
And did the book live up to that opening sentence?
I'm still in the middle of it.
Okay. Stanley Fish, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stanley Fish, a professor of law at Florida International University in Miami, guest columnist this month for the New York Times, with us from WXEL, a member station in West Palm Beach, Florida.